You're listening to the Expression Engine Podcast, episode number 79. Today, we're talking about EE add-on development with special guest, Mark Croxton. I'm your host, Leia Alcantara, and I'm joined by my fab co-host,
Emily Lewis.
This episode is sponsored by EE Garage. EE Garage provides must-have add-ons built by dedicated Expression Engine developers with over 5 years' experience. NSM Better Meta, NSM Reports, and NSM Override are just some of the popular add-ons backed by an excellent support team. EE Garage is committed to the community, and as a thank you for those tuning in, they are providing you, our beloved listener, with one free add-on. Visit ee-garage.com/EEPodcast to get your premium add-on today.
The Expression Engine Podcast would also like to thank Pixel and Tonic for being our major sponsor of the year. Hey, Leia, what's been going on with you?
I'm enjoying fall for the most part. It's really beautiful this time of year, and it's still warm enough to do things outside. But that's not as exciting as you. I heard you moved to a new place. How's that going?
Oh, it's going. I'm still unpacking, but it's a really beautiful old 100-year-old adobe house, which is something I've always dreamt of living in since I moved to the Southwest. It comes with a lot of Black Widow spiders and some roaches. Lovely. So I'm getting used to my roommates. but I have an exterminator that's trying to get that under control. But other than that, it's been a really great experience. Stressful, but I'm really excited about being settled in here.
It sounds really cool.
Yeah, this is our first podcast from my new Adobe house.
Ooh.
You know, our last podcast, we talked with Adrian Travis about template partials with the Stash add-on. And It was really inspiring for me. I'm convinced I must try her approach for my next EE build. But I don't have one of those quite around the corner yet. But I remember you mentioning it was something you were thinking about trying for a new client.
Yeah, pretty much. So I actually did dive into it just recently with a current client of mine just to see how it goes. And you know what? With Adrian's article, and I also read an article from Viguette's blog as well. It's so far so good. What I'm struggling with a bit is what is okay to repeat and not repeat in terms of readability and still wrapping my mind around this way of creating templates.
Cool. Now, Since we talked a fair amount about the Stash add-on with Adrian and how she's building her template partials, we thought it would be fitting to talk to the creator of Stash and other extremely useful add-ons, Mark Croxton. Mark is a partner at the Hallmark Design Consultancy, where he focuses on web design and development. As we mentioned, he's the developer behind some of the most popular and useful EE add-ons available, including Stash, Switchy, and If Else. Welcome, Mark. Thanks for joining our podcast today.
Hello there. How are you?
We're great.
So, thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Did you have an opportunity to listen to our podcast with Adrian and how she's using your Stash add-on?
Yes, I did, yeah. It's very close to the approach that I take as well. She's sort of simplified it a little bit because she's only using one wrapper template. And I tend to switch out the wrapper templates using Switchy.
Oh.
But it's kind of useful if you're trying to, say, create multilingual sites or sites where you've got multiple views for the same set of content.
Mm-hmm. Will that even apply, like, in a mobile situation?
Indeed, yeah. So you could have a sort of adaptive design where the content and the presentation of the mobile view is a bit different to the sort of tablet view or the desktop view.
So when you are creating your templates, do you actually, I know when I was chatting with Adrienne, she prefers to keep some of the HTML in her templates a lot more. So it's a lot more readable and easier to update for her. How do you approach it? Do you try to separate it as much as possible? What exactly is, you know, in your opinion, the right balance?
Well, if you're going to be quite purist about it, then you should really try and separate the HTML markup from the view model, if you like, entirely, and put it into snippets or use stash lists so that you don't actually have to have markup in that template at all. Because really the idea is that you have a separation of concerns. You have a view model which deals with the getting and of data and the sort of presentational logic, and then you have a view template which just deals with the markup. And that way you can swap out the markup more easily and also reformat it on the fly for different for different purposes, like for like I said before, like a multilingual site where you might have, for example, a right-to-left template for languages like Hebrew and Arabic, Chinese, and a left-to-right template for Latin-based languages. That's just an example. It gives you that flexibility to have a separation between your view model logic and your presentation, the markup.
Has that approach been your standard approach since beginning your work with EE? And is that why you created some of these add-ons to scratch your own itch?
It hasn't been my approach. No, I started out probably like most expression engine developers with a header template and a footer template. And I was always dissatisfied with that approach because you could never, you'd have, say, the page title being set in the body of the template, but you wouldn't have no means really to pass it to the title tag in the head, for example. You end up replicating the channel entries tag. You get multiple tags on a page on a template just to solve the problem of passing data between different parts of the of your templates. So I was always dissatisfied with that approach and recognized it wasn't working. I read this article by John Wells about template partials, and it just sort of struck me that approach was, it just made so much sense to me immediately. In the article, he sort of encourages you to build your own plugin, and that's exactly what I did for Stash. I set out to sort of, I didn't set out to write like the definitive template partials plugin. I wanted to make something that worked for me and explore what I could do with it. And it just so happened that I had this quite complicated project that I was starting, and I thought, well, I might as well just give it a go. It sort of evolved from that project. All the various bits and pieces to it grew from the requirements that came out of that project.
So yeah. it was initially something Stash came about to address your template development and then just be evolved to do so much more?
Yeah. It solved particular problems that I'd been having and encountering time and again. And I started to, initially I sort of had this idea that you should have this separation of markup from the view model, but I wasn't able to implement that fully because I still ended up, as Adrienne found, in her examples, ends up with bits of content mixed up into the view model. Mm-hmm. It's not ideal. I sort of compromised a bit by using snippets. Putting those little bits of markup, for example, a list item row, into a snippet, so that it's kind of it's in a separate place. But it's definitely a compromise, and I wasn't happy with that, and that's why I took it. I kind of pushed it a bit further with, particularly with lists, Stash lists, to get to avoid that problem.
So let's take a step back a bit. You mentioned that you had a few problems before you started using Stash. What in particular were the main problems that you wanted Stash to solve?
Yeah, it's probably, I'm sure you've had this as well. You end up creating nested embeds.
Yeah.
Partially, it's because of pass order. You just find that in order to get a particular item of data to another part of your template, you need to create an embed and pass it as a variable through the embed. And I just found that it is kind of useful to have that to encapsulate your templates, your reusable elements of your template into templates. That's certainly a good thing, but the bad thing is that you end up with lots and lots of nesting, and the nested templates, nested embeds, inevitably leads to a slow website. And I found that was a real problem on some of the websites I was building, quite large, quite a lot of traffic. And I found that the embeds made a big difference. The number of embeds made a big difference to the actual speed that they responded. So it was important. It was also the same. You must be aware of my plugin Switchy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was kind of came out of a similar problem that I saw with conditionals, where all of the different matching conditionals, non-matching conditionals, would still be rendered by the template parser. And of course, that adds overhead to a page. And so Switchy was a solution to that problem with advanced conditionals. Again, that came out of basically hitting walls with speed and responsiveness of expression engine websites.
Since the initial development for these add-ons like Stash and Switchy, they've evolved over time. How do you decide how to grow an add-on?
Quite often it's from suggestions made by people that are actually using it. It comes from the forums or over Twitter. Or I wrote If Else. Jacob Russell said, could we have a kind of Switchy for if else conditions? Mm-hmm. So, and I thought that was a good idea. And so I just sort of threw something together just because it was just kind of like a great idea. So it's either suggestions by people through the forums, or it's problems that I encounter in the client work I'm doing. One example would be the parsing of bits of template code later on in the parse order of a template. Mm-hmm. That came out of a problem I had in particular with one of our clients, where we needed to get some injected HTML, JavaScript and CSS into the head of the page. And so I came up with this parse order subversion in Stash, where you can process at the end of a template parsing. So you've got mm-hmm. Parameter process end, process inline, process start. And that just means that you can turn the parse order on its head, really, and process your chunk of code at a different time at the end of template parsing, which is an incredibly handy thing. I just use it more and more now for my templates.
And I assume that also improves performance as well?
Yes, it can do. If it means that you don't need to have an embed. Mm-hmm. If you create a Stash variable, process it at the end and use the save parameter as well, you can cache the rendered output of that chunk of code for a particular period of time. And that means that the next time that the template's viewed, it won't actually be processed.
So I'm curious, you mentioned, you know, we're still talking about embeds, and embeds seem to be the sticking point in terms of performance. But, you know, when I'm working on my current Stash site and using Adrian's examples, we still need to embed the wrapper template somehow.
Yeah.
Is there any way in the future where that can be avoided, where we can pull the wrapper template without having to use the native embed?
Well, one embed's not too bad, mm-hmm. in actual fact. But there is I wrote a new tag called the Stash embed, mm-hmm. Which functions in much the same way as an expression engine embed, but gives you a lot more custom parameters, and you can really kind of change the way that content of the template is parsed. You can change the order in which Stash embeds are processed using the priority parameter. You can choose to include your Stash embed at the very start of its host templates before parsing has happened. You can include it in line as if it was a tag, or you can include it at the end of template parsing, which is almost exactly the same as an expression engine embed. And in addition to that, you can demarcate areas of the template with Stash no cache tag pairs, mm-hmm. So that those areas don't actually get cached and remain as kind of dynamic elements. Mm-hmm. So that you can have areas of the template which are rendered and areas which are dynamic, and thereby you have a much more efficient template. You can use Stash embeds to replace conventional embeds in most situations. providing that you take advantage of the caching, then they're going to be more efficient than expression engine embeds.
And when you say caching, caching via stash, like the cache parameters in stash, or do you mean caching in general with EE caching options?
No. Stash, when you save a variable or read a file and save it into a variable, which is what happens when you stash encounters and embed, what you're doing is saving a chunk of data into a new row in a database table. And that data could be partially rendered content or a mix of dynamic content and HTML that's been rendered. So you can control how much of that data that is actually cached. Subsequent views of your template, a stash embed doesn't go back to the file. It reads from the database cache. There's a parameter which you can use in your website's configuration file to make stash always check back the file, and that's very useful when you're developing a website so that you can make changes and see them immediately. But if you disable that when you go to production, then you'll find that your site will load very, very quickly.
You're talking about some features of stash that maybe folks might not be as familiar with, given the types of projects they're working on. Are there any other approaches or even just individual parameters that you think are pretty powerful in stash that maybe folks don't know about?
Yeah, I mean, one of the useful parameters that I use quite a lot are the match against filtering. So there's a match and an against parameter, which allows you to specify a regular expression against which the variable is matched. You can use that when you're either setting a variable or a list or getting a variable or a list. So you could, for example, store, if you had a channel of people and you save that as a list of, as a stash list, and then you just wanted to output all of the people where there's a custom field called last name, and you want to output all the people with the last name beginning with C, you could use match and against to do that when you're getting the list.
I really, really, really struggle with regular expressions. Do you have any suggestions, especially for maybe a more designer-minded person to get up to speed on using regular expressions?
There's good resources on the internet. I think there's regex info. It's worth checking out. There's quite a lot of introductions to regular expressions and the basics of them. They're not that hard.
Well, I mean, I know Switchy will support using regular expressions, which I think is one of the things that makes it quite powerful. Yet, I'm not quite able to leverage that power because I'm not able to really write an effective regular expression.
They seem intimidating, like any sort of programming, but I think there's some basic things you could know. For example, a caret means the start of a line. A dollar symbol means the end of a line. Just that knowledge is on its own is really useful. Backslash D matches a digit. There's some basic stuff that you could read up on, and it'll give you an awful lot of more power to what you do in your templates. It's definitely worth learning. They're not that hard. There's there's some lots of online testing, regular expression testing locations, like Rubula, I think is one, where you can put your regular expression in and see if it matches a particular string that you're trying to match, and that's extremely useful.
Oh, okay.
And there's also little Mac applications and Windows applications which do the same thing. But you very, very quickly get the hang of regular expressions. I'm no expert, really, on regular expressions. But they can even be fun, so give it a go.
Well, I'm really grateful that at least in Switchy, you give an example of probably one of the more common regular expressions, which is pagination. Like, how do I detect a paginated string? Feature request, more examples, please.
Well, that's not a bad idea. I think, you're probably right. I mean, one of the things that Stash and Switchy both lack really a really good documentation, and I'm not very good at that. I was really grateful to Adrienne for writing that article about Stash. It's one of the things I'm not really very good at, I'm afraid. I do my best.
Is that why you provide your add-ons for free?
Yes, that's partly the reason.
What are the other reasons?
I've got a lot out of open source software generally, CodeIgniter in particular, and I just feel like I have a sort of debt to repay in that respect, to give back, because I've just benefited so much. So I think it's good to support open source software to as far as possible to release your software as open source. You mentioned that. The support issue is another. It's quite hard to support add-ons on a commercial basis. If a free add-on, in some respects, people have fewer expectations of you. I mean, it's a bit, possibly a bit lazy, but I don't have much time to answer questions. I try as best I can on the support forums. And I think with something like Stash in particular, that it's a really complex module. And it takes a lot of investment in time from expression engine developers to get to know how it works. I think if you had to buy it, I don't think they'd buy it. I think it would be a barrier to actually the adoption of this paradigm.
Well, I remember Adrienne mentioning on our last episode that one of the things she got she found most useful with regard to Stash was just in the forums about how people are using it and their own questions. So in a way, the support that is there is still helpful.
Yeah, it's grown quite a lot, actually, that forum. It's there's quite a lot of useful stuff in there. If you search through, there's a very good chance that your question's already been asked. Because the same questions really normally about pass order come up again and again as well. One of the things that comes up again and again is this idea of trying to set a variable within another tag and then trying to get it outside of that tag. People don't quite appreciate that module tags are passed outwards inwards. Mm-hmm. Plugin tags are passed in the other way around. But it's like a sort of, I think of it as like an onion. You peel the layers off. So the template parser makes multiple passes of a template, peels off the outer layer of tag pairs to reveal the inner layer. And then that inner layer would have been transformed by the outer layers, the passing of the outer layer. And so it kind of progresses like that, as peeling away layers one at a time until there are no more tags left. That's how it works. There's a guy, Lowe, has written some really good resources on pass order, which I'd certainly like to encourage developers to read. There's a PDF, I believe, and a slideshow. It sort of goes into detail about how, the order in which things are passed. And I think an understanding of that is extremely important if you're going to make the best use of something like Stash, so that you can appreciate why things happen the way they do.
And then perhaps in turn more effectively use Stash to sort of subvert that parse order.
That's right. You sort of need to understand why. I think I do worry that some people are doing this blind. They're making use of it, possibly because it's meant, it's the cool thing to do, but not quite appreciating why they're doing it. And I think that's a shame. I think if more developers learned about the pass order and why it can be useful to subvert it at certain times, then that would be good. And it would mean I wouldn't get so many questions.
So that's not really a pet peeve. It's more of something you'd love to see more developers do. But do you have a pet peeve that you see a lot of add-on developers doing that they should, maybe change or look out for, or something that has there's a better approach to it?
Well, I do, but I'm not sure many add-on developers would agree with me.
Sure.
I quite often extend existing classes. I wrote multiplayer, for example, which extended player. And I find that add-on developers quite often make some of their internal classes private rather than protected the visibility. This is it's quite hard to extend a class where some of the methods are private because you can't override them in the child class. It would be great if other add-on developers could use private visibility for classes which are absolutely, you know, internal, and if there's something which, particularly if it's like core to the way the add-on works, like in the case of player, it was the relationship method, the way that relationships were established, then making it protected would be brilliant to people like me who want to extend it.
So why?
But I'm not sure they'd agree with me. I'm not sure
why wouldn't a developer agree with that? I don't do add-on development, so I'm not really sure what the pro or con of that approach is.
Well, they probably wouldn't agree because they don't want people messing about and creating sort of subsidiary add-ons which create random bits of functionality, which they then can't control and then possibly have to get support requests for, well, why doesn't this work, and so on. So I understand why you would object to it, but at the same time, I think that the benefits of it are so important that I'd much prefer that they use protected than private. But not many developers would agree with me on that one, I don't think.
Do you think there is such a thing as a best practices for developing add-ons for Expression Engine? I saw on Twitter that Dev Demon was talking about a PSR2 coding standard, but then it conflicts with the syntax guide or whatever. Do you have a sort of process thinking this is the way you need to do it?
Well, you should follow a code style, a style guide, either the general style guide that's comes with the user manual and Code Igniter, or you could adopt the PSR 1 and 2 coding style guides. I kind of prefer the syntax of the Code Igniter style guide to PSR 2, but, you know, I think the most important thing is actually consistency. So adopting one or the other is a good thing. Other things you can do, quite often I see in other people's add-ons, is markup and JavaScript mixed up inside a model file or inside the module itself, the class itself. It should be separated out into view files. Same with any kind of database interactions. They should go into model files rather than being all mixed up together. So you've got proper separation of those areas. Also, making use of the actual built-in helper functions and APIs instead of reinventing them, which happens a few times.
Why do you think that is? Is it because a lot of people aren't even aware that these APIs or hooks exist? Is that why? Do you think that the developer community needs to have some more communication, or at least like, here's a standard, you know, hooks for everything here?
Well, I think it's just going to be awareness that they don't exist, these functions. And some new things have been added. So if you were used to developing in the old way, then say moving from Expression Engine 1 to 2, you're not necessarily going to be aware of the helper functions in Code Igniter, for example. So, yeah, I mean, it's just awareness, really. I completely understand how people can create add-ons and, you know, they've got a deadline and they just need to use some existing snippet of code that they've got already that works, and they just use that. But obviously, I mean, this is, if we're talking about best practice, then try and make use of the framework, the Expression Engine framework, Code Igniter framework, to do the heavy duty stuff for you rather than reinventing it. And also make your methods, your class methods, as generalized as possible, so that if your class is extended, for example, by me, I can add new functionality to it without needing to completely rewrite parts of it. Writing lots of comments as well, so that someone else reading your code can understand why you're trying to do something.
So do you have a process yourself when you create an add-on? Is there a pre-planning step involved?
Not always, but quite often I am one of these, I'm that guy under pressure that needs to get something mm-hmm. done. And I just get out my text editor and start coding. But I have built a few add-ons where I sit down and sketch out what I want. And particularly if it's got a database component to it, I'll try and model the database, the data model, if you like, in a. I've got an app called SQL Editor that I use to do that, so I can put the tables together and see how they relate. And if it's got a kind of control panel component, a user interface, then I'll knock that out in Illustrator and flesh it out in Fireworks or Photoshop and work out the sort of the markup and the JavaScript for it before I actually build anything. Yeah, programming the add-on, it's a good idea to sort of put your write class method stubs in your class and just write out under each method what you're going to be doing in that method, mm-hmm. So that you sort of get an outline of mm-hmm. all of your functionality that you need to build. And that's incredibly useful, that kind of approach, just writing comments first and then building functionality. And then, I mean, I tend to sort of write a main comment, and then if there's like a sort of main conditional in a method, I'll write the different types of conditions. If this happens, then do that. So I sort of write out a kind of almost like a big to-do list in a class, and then build mm-hmm. it up from there.
I think we're almost out of time. Before we wrap up, I have one final question. As an add-on developer, what's your favorite add-on that isn't yours?
It's probably Low Search.
Interesting. Low Search. Why?
It's really, really useful for filtering entries in various ways. And it persists your choices. Let's say you've created a form. Yeah. Let's say you've created a form where you've made a number of different choices, perhaps the category, the date range, and so on. Lowe's coded it so that those choices are remembered, and they're persisted in the data, in the string that's actually sent to the segment on the results page. So all of that data is there for you to use. He's also got four in conditionals, for example, so you can repopulate a select menu or a multi-select menu. It's great. I've been using it quite a lot. I think it's a really great example of an add-on that makes it actually utilizes the channel entries module, so it runs it internally.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so you've got all of the functionality of channel entries, exactly the same thing that Player does as well. So it's building on top of that, but providing extra functionality. And the other great thing about it, of course, is that it has an index of all of your searchable entries, and that searching that index is very fast compared to actually searching through the channel data mm-hmm. table or the channel titles table. Much, much faster than the built-in search module. I'm sold on Low Search. I think it's great.
Emily, do you have any final questions?
Well, I was curious about one thing. Has there been a user or a scenario that has surprised you the way someone used one of your add-ons?
There's been quite a lot of interesting approaches have come out of the forums, and people have said, "Oh, I'm trying to do this," and I thought, "Oh, that's an interesting thing. I've never thought of actually doing that." One example is the sort of organizing entries into categories. I hadn't thought that you could do that through using Stash, but someone said, "Well, can you do this?" And I had to think about it and realized that actually you could. There's quite a lot of things that come out of just suggestions or on the forums. One was like the crumb trails, remembering the pages that you visited. Someone had built an entire sort of crumb trail system based on Stash.
Oh, huh.
Which was great. And but they needed a method to unset that crumb trail. Mm-hmm. But of course, Stash didn't have an unset. So I wrote one. So it's great. I really enjoy that feedback that I get for the add-ons. And it helps to improve the add-ons quite a lot.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mark.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you.
It was great talking with you as well. In case our listeners want to follow up with you, where can they find you online?
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at Croxton, or you can find me on my website at hallmark-design.co.uk.
Great.
Thanks, Mark. Now we'd like to thank our sponsors for this podcast, EE Garage and Pixel & Tonic.
We would also like to thank our partners, Engine Hosting and Devotee.
Also, thanks to our listeners for tuning in. If you want to know more about the podcast, make sure you follow us on Twitter at EE Podcast or visit our website, ee-podcast.com.
And don't forget to tune into our next episode when we'll be recording live at EECI in Austin, Texas.
Ooh. This is Leia Alcantara.
And Emily Lewis.
Signing off for the Expression Engine Podcast. See you next time.
Cheers.